Tina, I'm going to add it.
Amen.
Whew. So nervous. So grateful. I was sitting over there thinking about how comfortable I was in here. I know it's because I made a decision not to hold back today. Like, I've come into meetings and I've been asked to share, and I would come in there and say, I'm not going to tell them that. My prayer would not be, God, use me. My prayer would be, please, Lord, don't let that shit slip out. I want to thank the programming committee. I want to thank all the committees who put this convention together. Programming, Jan. I know that programming couldn't do it by itself. Like, if it wasn't for the other committees, it would just be a bunch of speakers with a bunch of topics. Nowhere to share, nobody to share to. So I thank God for everybody who had a part of this. I want to thank my sponsees for their support. All six of them are here today. And I'm so grateful for those ladies because they understand that their sponsor needs support too. Like, I make it real clear with them. I'm not the first or the last word. We help each other. I thank you, ladies. I want to thank my home group, the Hope Fiends group in Central Maryland, for giving me a place when I didn't have one. For giving me a forum to share the good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, the intolerant, the sick. I want to thank them for showing up today, supporting me. All I had to do was share it once, and they showed up. I want to thank the addict Gene for his daily contribution to my freedom. I'm talking about being in a relationship where I don't gotta hide nothing. I love you. I want y'all to pray for him because on Thursday he got a call, and I'm gonna share his story because I'm about to marry him, and his story is my story too. That his father died. Actually, the story is they found him on Thursday. They think he died Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Nobody's sure. Because he suffered from the same disease that we got. The one that isolates us. Keeps us from calling people, keeps us from showing up. You know what I'm saying? The literature says it isolates us and makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment impossible. So y'all pray for us as we go through that. I want to thank God for giving me the strength and the courage to come in here and do this workshop. I'm thanking him because this has been hard. It's been a struggle for a couple reasons. Number one, fear and intimidation. You know, this is a lot. Calling me all 90 days in advance. Telling me who I'm sharing with. What's the topic and how big the goddamn room is. This is a lot. It's a lot of pressure. I was talking to another addict and I was like, I don't know why we can't just have all our meetings at the dough roller. We be sharing our ass off at the dough roller.
In the back.
So y'all know what y'all got to look forward to if I ever get in charge of this. God damn it. A basket of curly fries. And it's on. Once I got past the fear, it was also difficult to come in here and share. Because today, Stacey, is the 90-day anniversary of my father's death. My father died January 14, 2007, 9:38 p.m. at a Hospital room, Silver Spring, Maryland, right? And it's no mistake that I stand here today sharing on this topic today. Because when my dad died, I understand that he was free. At one time, my dad was young and vibrant, held several jobs. He had a zest for life. And at the end, he was trapped in this broken up body that was full of disease and aches and pain. He couldn't do the stuff that he loved to do no more. You know what I'm saying? So I know that his death freed him. At the end, everything that my daddy owned fit into the smallest room of my mother's house. But what y'all need to know is that it wasn't because he was poor or broke or neglected. It's because at the end, all those things didn't mean nothing to my father. Matter of fact, he ain't owe nobody no apology. He had very little bills. His car and his house was paid for. I think we had to pay like a $97 gas card bill and some other small little stuff, but his car insurance was paid to the end of the month. My daddy took everything that meant anything to him with him. It was his memories, his love of his children, his family, his character, the things that mean something. I thank God for my father. My daddy's death. Now, on the day that he died, you couldn't tell me that something good was going to come out of it. There was no way that I could see anything good coming out of it. Now, I didn't get mad at God. Because trust me, I embrace everything that God and my understanding does for me. I don't question him when he's giving me what I want or even when he don't. Because I understand that for me to question my father's death would mean that I would have to question my very existence. Like I would have to ask him, why did you save me? So I don't even get in the business of asking him why he does what he does. What happened though was on the day that I got that phone call, I was the last one called and the first one to arrive at the hospital. And I walked into the room, and there was a bunch of strangers around the foot of my father's bed. Everything that indicated life was gone. The machines, the feeding pumps, the TV was cut off. He was wrapped up, and he was laying there, and I walked into it. I'm sharing that because it was at that moment that I came face to face with my reservation. I told myself early in recovery that if I ever had to bury my parents, I would not do it clean. Then I found so. Then I bring. I did my first step here. And my reservation was I couldn't do it. And I walked in that room smack dead in front, you know what I'm saying, face to face with my reservation. And I'm here to tell you that I'm so glad that I bought into this program when I did. It took 4.5 years of meetings, step work and sponsorship and sharing and showing up at conventions just to get me through that one moment. Because at that time, the only person in that room that knew I had a disease of addiction was dead. And it would have took nothing for an addict like me to manipulate some pills or something out of that doctor. You know, this program has afforded me the ability to get through some of the most painful moments of my life without using. And that's a freedom. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, I can remember as far back when I was 4 years old. And I remember that was the first time that I actually got drunk. It was at a New Year's Eve party. My family was all together. And they did what they always do with the kids, and that was push us into another room. And they had a couple of real clear instructions, and one of the instructions was, don't drink that punch. It looks good, but it's an adult punch. It was real pretty, it was red, it had fruit all in the bottom, and we didn't touch the punch until it was gone. And I went and I proceeded to grab a handful of the fruit and eat it, and I got drunk. Now, what I remember about that day is where I was once isolated, the adults welcomed it because I was entertaining. The alcohol made me accepted by the adults. They were laughing, they were smiling. I felt good. The next day, they were still talking about it. I was the center of attention. Didn't get in no trouble. And I always share that story when I share my story because I know it was at that moment that my ideals about alcohol was formulated. I felt that alcohol turned me into somebody that I wasn't, turned me into somebody entertaining. I wasn't getting in no trouble, and I thought it was a good thing. The next time that I used, I was 16 years old. It was at my own sweet 16 party, and one more time I didn't feel accepted. It seemed like everybody else was having a good time except me. You know, back then in the 80s, you didn't care who party it was. You just showed up. So even though I wasn't real popular, there was a lot of people there. At some point, the cheerleaders was over there having a good time, and the jocks was over there having a good time, and I didn't fit into any of the groups in the room except the ones that came in with the beer. Now, the only requirement for their membership was drink. And I said, I could do that. And I immediately reverted back to that four-year-old girl that was the life of the party. I was dancing. I was singing all the songs. I wasn't no longer waiting on the guys to ask me to dance. I was approaching them, and it was on. As I got older and more mature, so did my drugs. I remember starting to use crack cocaine. I remember the crack houses actually being people's homes with leases and everything. They lived there, they had keys. I remember when I was hungry, they would offer me something to eat. I remember them sharing. I remember the tricks, having the whole $10 when they said, hey, what did? Things started off real good. I remember running out of drugs and not having a problem saying, okay, see y'all next weekend. Fast forward. 16 years later, and everything that I was doing was an act of homicide or suicide. At the end for me, it wasn't about just using. It was about dying. Like, you don't jump into a car with three youngins and go into a back alley and think that it's just about using. Everything I did was about killing myself or helping you to kill me. I remember standing on a corner and being hit with a rock. I'm standing there and got hit with a rock, right? And I was looking around, and it was a group of crazy kids across the street, and they had made up a game called Hit the Crackhead. Now, it was okay when other people were getting hit by rocks. I was like, aha, crackhead. But when I got hit with the rock, I had to look around. I was the crackhead. And I didn't know how I had got there. I sat there and said, what happened? Now, it's one thing when everybody around me was saying, what the fuck is going on? But when I sat there that day and said, Tina, what is going on? The denial started to shatter. Like, the little kids knew I had a problem. So I did. Found my step on the doorstep of this fellowship, right? Brimming with love. I had nowhere else to go. And I began to fight like my life depended on it. One of the first things y'all taught me was that this disease affects me mentally, spiritually, and physically. And the topic of this workshop is freedom from bondage. And I'm feeling like sharing about the mental, the physical, and the spiritual bondage so that I can talk about the mental and physical and spiritual pain, Kevin. Freedom, I mean. Mentally, I came into this program wounded. I had a set of ideals and principles that was, you know, embedded in me for a long time. I clearly think that if you tell me something enough, I'm going to start to believe it. I remember being told I was a bitch over and over again to the point where I thought, I can't wait. I remember being told that we could not watch the show Good Times because it wasn't real. We were brought up to believe that there was no way that their family could be held together that way and be that poor. My mother couldn't understand how Floyd could praise God every day, eating grits. Based on Thelma's outside, she was referred to as a slut. James couldn't be that much of a man. He couldn't even hold a job, take care of his family. I'm talking about the ideals and the mentality that I came in here with. Physically, I never liked how I looked. I grew up in the era where the Proctors was the shit. And if I didn't have the right last name or the right complexion or the right label on my jeans, I was out. I was always heavy, and I was always insecure about it. Spiritually, that thing that you can't touch, feel, that thing that keeps me from connecting, keeps me from getting intimate, that thing that makes me judge you based on something you didn't do, but somebody you remind me of. Like, I came in this fellowship putting judgments on everybody that reminded me of my ex-husband. If you was cheating, you took everything that I wanted to tell him. If you left somebody for another woman, God damn it, you was leaving me too. And I no longer liked you either. We always talk about principles over personalities in this fellowship. And it's real easy when I got to practice a principle because of your fucked up personality. But I'm going to tell you where I'm going at with this. What about when the fucked up personality is mine? And I got to practice a principle regardless of how envious I am, how jealous, how resentful, or how angry. Principles over my personality. Ooh. I love Narcotics Anonymous. All those things that I talked about was a form of bondage, because when I think about bondage and what it does to me, when I think about being controlled by something else, when I think about Kunta Kinte, and I think about slavery and bondage, and I think about how Kunta had no control over who he slept with. That's what bondage does to me. I think about how Kunta had to act a certain way around certain people, how everything he did was an act of trying to hold on to his identity. He was not going to be called Toby. Bondage. Y'all see Happy Feet? Because we about to talk about freedom. Happy Feet is about this painting, right? His name was Mumbles. And in a little penguin world, right, it was so important that every penguin have a little heart song. Well, Mumbles ain't have a heart song. This nigga could dance his ass off. Everything about Mumbles, everybody in the little penguin community was like, Mumbles, stop doing that shit. That's not real penguin of you. And Mumbles was confused. He was like, this seems natural. It feel good, but okay. So every time he tried to stop himself, his little feet... Like, he was trying to be something that other people wanted him to be, and he couldn't do it. So here I am, fucking mumbles, right? In the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, and it's looking for my heart song. And I'm looking for my place. And I'm looking to fit in. And I told you, like, at this point, I had an inability to form healthy relationships. Right? So I had gotten to the point where everything that I did was an act of manipulation. This program, let me share this. I need to know that as a result of me being here, I've acquired some stuff. This program has afforded me a couple of nice things. And these things are not strange to me. I've gotten things before. I want y'all to know that there is one thing that I've never had before that I got today from this program. And that's a choice. I learned in my step work that I have an asset and a defect by the same name. Determination. The same determination that kept me smoking crack for 16 years keeps me clean. Only the disease of addiction can be that fucking cunning, baffling and powerful to give me an asset and a defect by the same name. So every day I have to purpose to make good choices or bad choices. So I'm mumbled and I'm sitting here and I'm looking for my heart song. And the thing about it is I had to make some different choices. We're talking about freedom to choose who I let into my life. Freedom to say no. Freedom to say stop, that hurts me. And actually stop worrying about what I needed to stop doing and worry about what I need to start doing. I had to sit through the uncomfortable times. I had to walk through the loneliness. I was sad a lot of times. And look, I thank God for my sponsor. Because this was the place I was at about 8 months ago, right after I celebrated 4 years clean. And she performed like a spiritual CPR on me. She breathed life back where it had been lost, right? And she started to work with me. I'm talking about her reaching out to me because I decided to reach out for help. All she did was reach back. And as a result of that, I've been able to make some different choices. And as a result of that, I've been able to, experience some of the freedom. I came in here wounded, not thinking I would ever measure up. Not thinking I would ever fall in love. Not thinking nobody would ever want me. I put away my measuring stick that said boyfriend at the top. And I pulled out my measuring stick that said husband at the top. And I'm here to report that I'm getting married. Now, not just getting married, because I did that shit the first time, just got married. I'm talking about being in a relationship where I don't have to worry about walking into a room and worrying about who he's sleeping with. It's freedom. It ain't shit none of y'all could tell him, because I done told him first before I came to the meeting. I don't have no secrets from that man. He knows exactly who he's marrying. And another freedom for me is being in love with somebody that loves me back. How about that? Go figure that shit. It's a partnership. Physically, I've always struggled with my weight since I was younger. In June last year, I went to the doctor. I was 293 pounds. I was suffering from sleep apnea, high blood pressure, cholesterol, all kinds of shit was falling off, all kinds of shit was hurting. Couldn't walk from here to the back of the room without taking at least two breaks. Physically, I was being held in bondage because I couldn't do a lot of stuff that I like to do. Physically, I was still insecure because I didn't want to walk into meetings or go certain places and let people see me like that. I was telling myself that for a long time that I was okay being a funny fat girl in the crowd. All that did was keep me from having to do any work on me. It's easy to say, you all right? Instead of actually do some work to get better. See, at some point, I had to start telling myself the truth. At some point, I had to ask myself, what are you justifying and rationalizing today? And I began to work. And I'm almost 80 pounds lighter. And I specifically bought this sweatsuit to share in. Because Debbie told me I look small in sweatsuits. Spiritually. I no longer sit in that place where it's important to sit back and talk about you. I no longer sit in that place where, like, all those things run and control my life. Because shit like that will keep me out of certain meetings, certain places. I've learned things like compassion and forgiveness and understanding and love. I've learned that everybody gets a turn and what you do comes back on you. I learned that it's okay to say you're hurting me, but it's not okay for you to ignore that shit. I learned freedom. When you talk about freedom, you talk about like getting to the other side of some stuff. Talking about, the literature says something about being broke loose from our chains. I just say time served. Good God, okay. I love this program. Jan told me 3 minutes ago, I got 5 minutes. But I did bring my Just for Today book. And I did want to talk about how one of the freedoms, one of the most best freedoms I've gotten is the ability to be able to look at myself and love myself today. And the January 25th Just for Today talks about, like, the topic of this convention is miracles in a mirror. And I know today that I'm a miracle. Not because y'all gave me a little hat and a little badge that says I am. Like, I knew that before that. Because the January 25th Just for Today reads, an added gift. We see it happening among us every day. The miraculous turnabout is evident of a spiritual awakening. We watch them walk into their first meeting defeated, their spirits broken. Their suffering is obvious, and the desire for help even more apparent. Tina collects a welcome chip and goes back to her seat, shaken by her effort. We see her again. And she seems a little more comfortable. She's found a sponsor. She's attended meetings every night. But she still won't meet our plans. But she nods in recognition as we share. We notice a spark in Tina, hope in her eyes, And she smiles us certainly when we encourage her to keep coming back. A few months later, she's standing straight up. She's learned how to make eye contact. She's working the steps with her sponsor and healing as a result. She listens. We listen to Tina sharing at meetings. We stack chairs with her afterwards. A few years later, she's speaking at a convention. She's gotten a wonderful, humorous personality. She smiles when she sees us. They hug us, and she tells y'all that she could have never done it without you. As they understand that we say, nor could we without you. Just for today, I will find joy in witnessing the recovery of another. The word miracle means having no understanding of why it is. Like, it makes no sense. It makes no sense that I'm not on a corner somewhere or dead. It don't make no sense. That I'm living my life so good that sometimes I wake up thinking, shit, they ain't give me my life back. They gave me somebody else's shit. This program is wonderful. If you're new in here, take it from me. I was scared, I was shaking, I was tired, and I didn't have nowhere else to go. I know today that I only get out of this program what I put into it, and freedom is not free. Right. It takes some work. I got a lot of stuff I'm still holding on to, y'all. But I'm working on it. You know what I'm saying? I'm a miracle in the making. I'm evidence of this program working. Ooh, and I thank you for allowing me to share.
Again, I'm Jan, I'm an addict. Amen. Thank Tina again for leading us on the dynamite message of freedom from bondage. This next gentleman, and I say today with respect, gentlemen, that I have the honor and the privilege of introducing to you today is a personal friend of mine. He is the one person, and I do mean one, in Narcotics Anonymous that I can say has walked with me my entire journey from day one of being introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. This is a brother I have not only heard of, but witnessed go through shit that, and be judged by, and judge some people too. I ain't nobody perfect in here. One or two here. But this guy, man, this is a very special and unique guy in my life because, you know, a girlfriend of mine always shared the same pain that made you pull your pants down and make you pull it up. And every time I look at him, I'm reminded of the hope and the promise that this program has to offer because the evidence is real. It is that's not just a man sitting there becoming a better man. That's a better man becoming a greater man. Because that's just how awesome God is. And without any fervor, I give you my personal friend, Saladin.
I'm Saladin, I'm an addict. And man, I'm glad and grateful to be anywhere clean and recovering one day at a time. And just for the day, I understand there's a big difference between the two. And I think I just got to the gratitude. And thanks for sharing, Tina. Great. Now, I'm kind of wondering something. How in the hell do you go behind Good Times, Roots, and Happy Feet? And I was talking to my sponsee, Gary, when they started to ask about the topics, right? And they was, they, man, they had a thing. They was telling Gary, man, you're supposed to be sharing with this girl. Man, she's a heavy hitter. You know, how we say anonymity, then we develop covert ways to break people's anonymity in the fellowship. Right. And, but what we came up with was that at the end of the day, man, I'm responsible for sharing my story. Right? Because for real, we all heavy hitters, man. You know, some of us just still in hiding a little more than others. Thank the programming committee. I want to thank everybody that showed up to support me. Right? I'm gonna tell you this, right? Because I've been I'm on the back end of 14 years in Narcotics Anonymous, right? I always start to look towards or project towards my upcoming anniversary at the halfway point. And this, when I come to Ocean City, it's the halfway point. I remember being here with 6 months, and I couldn't wait to stand up during the countdown for the whole year. So that kind of stuff comes back to me, right? In 14 and a half years, man, I have gotten a lot of love in the fellowship. And this is what if you knew or if you just getting to know me or you have gotten to know me via the NA hotline or since we didn't upgrade it, NA.com is the end thing in D.C. People love me in NA because I've given a lot of love in NA. That's the only reason. I didn't like show up one day, you know, we will give a degree of love because you knew. But something happens when the addict finds a way to push through the pain and courage and share of him or herself. And I have not lived in hiding. You know, I've like grown accustomed to being and accepted being the roadmap for somebody else. You know, I didn't like got outside of the box enough to know that a lot of times my pain is not for me. Because I didn't hurt a lot in Narcotics Anonymous, man. I came to the program because of pain. You know, I didn't come because I was trying to stop using. You know, stop using only crossed my mind when the pain of not having showed up. You know, when I couldn't make it work with $8 and change no more, then man, getting clean seems to make sense. You know, so what I'm understanding, I'm gonna tell y'all this first, right? Don't miss the blessing that's in the pain. You know, because God got a way, right? He don't really have to issue freedom to people that are already free. I had to really come to grips with that, man. That I was caught in a hopeless dilemma. You know, I had like forfeited the ability to decide not to use. And I'm just saying that as a point of reference for the newcomer, right? Because 14 and a half years later, I understand the pain of being caught in the obsession and losing the ability to decide not to use after not using drugs no more. Because we're talking about freedom now. Freedom from active addiction. Understanding that I got a disease that don't need drugs to be active. So I had to use the program, and I can't look. I'm not going to play with y'all. I am dead serious today because my life is at stake. And that's what happens when I'm dealing with my disease. I get deluded into thinking that I got more control of outcomes and circumstances than I really do. See, I really didn't intend to end up one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. That wasn't the plan. You know, but what I found out after I stopped using and start to use the program, and I'm going to tell y'all, there's a difference between using the program yourself and standing with somebody that's using the program. It don't work by osmosis. Every addict is held responsible for his or her work. And most of my bondage comes when I'm doing work that ain't mine. And that's what I had to realize about myself, man, because I put the drugs down, but I was driven by issues that created addiction to people. Yes, see, what really gets lost when I'm using is the ability to relate to others. Man, I didn't get high by myself. I didn't get high by myself, and if I did, it was the selfish drive of using. I wasn't getting high by myself because I wanted to. I understood that I had lost the connection with people. Gone. You're talking about bondage. The disease is so cunning and baffling, it's the only thing that will lock an addict up. Put the keys in the cell with him or her and challenge them to come out, and the addict will say, nah, I'm not coming out. That's what I deal with. And I'm not talking about being high. We're a long way from Eastgate. They done tore the buildings down. I've been clean long enough to know that being in bondage in Narcotics Anonymous don't have a damn thing to do with getting high. So where I'm at, and it's funny because my high power started to deal with me. You know, for the person that really takes light what we do in service right here. This is not a game. This is not, but be careful what you ask for. Because God got a way of when you ask to get seen in NA, he'll make sure he show you to everybody. So we get topics around here now. Because I done got some topics. And man, every topic I done got, I've been forced to live through. Every single. See, you got to be careful when you're looking at me. Because you're looking at unfinished work. He's dealing with me. He's teaching me something. And a lot of the stuff that I'm learning ain't for me. That's what blows my mind. See, in order for that to become real, the addict has to decrease. The addict got, see, God ain't going to take you through nothing for somebody else until he know you decreasing your arrogance enough not to take responsibility for the change. So you think I'm just in here paddling around for nothing? I have nothing else better to do. I got rescued from drugs in 1992. I've been in Narcotics Anonymous 14 and a half years. I've spent half of my adult life recovering in NA. I got here, I was 19 years old. Well, we better not negotiate with the meeting about how we going to share what we want to share. When it was understood that we shared on the topic, and they explained that we stay on topic because an addict needs discipline. That's when I got here. I got here when it was understood that what the predecessor shared with me was rooted in love. They ain't need to tell me, Saladin, I love you, after they said sit down and shut up. I understood after they said every good idea you had got you here. And when we know, when we want to know, how to cop with $8 in change, we'll ask you. I understood that was about love. But I'm going to tell you something now. I'm going to tell you about the disease. The disease of addiction that fans its own flame long before the addict picks up a drug. And has the addict develop a resistance to love. One of the hardest things to do in NA is to love another addict. We're going to talk bondage. And what am I trying to get? Freedom. When I look at bondage, I'm talking about bondage to the people, bondage to the places, bondage to the patterns. We're in the fourth step now. If I don't have an inventory, I'm locked up and don't even know. That's the most dangerous kind of addict. Man, if I got high today or tomorrow, understand this. If I got high today or tomorrow, I will be fully cognizant of the fact that I'm getting high. And that's what you said, the ability to choose. I've been given the opportunity not so much to change my life, but to get an opportunity to choose to change my life if I want to. That was really what got lost when I was getting high. I couldn't decide not to go. So I stopped using, man, and I really didn't understand what I was locked into. I ain't understand that, man. I'm talking about the self-acceptance pamphlet that suggests that the dilemma of the addict with substantial clean time is the ability to accept self on a deeper level. We ain't in the crack house no more. Every time you share your experience with me, don't keep telling me how you was getting high. Haven't you been clean for 10 years? I need to know what you're struggling with today. Don't keep telling me how you was walking up and down Georgia Avenue. I was on it. Wasn't that your anniversary last year? I'm trying to get out. I ain't in here because I ain't got nothing else, but I'm trying to get free. So when I started to realize that the gift that the power gives, the initial gift, is awareness. That's what them first four steps is about. Man, I'm powerless. What you mean you're powerless? I can't decide not to steal my grandmother's TV. We'll go with that answer, Saladin. I'm unmanageable. What you talking about? When I get a feeling that say go, I got to go. Go where? That don't matter. I look at the second step. Well, you got to come to believe. Because this is going to require a restoration. Do you know what? If you don't understand what the process of restoration is, the people that's in D.C., y'all know we did all that re-gentrification? They building everything in D.C. People moving, they building everything. I'm going to tell you the spirituality in that. It's before it go up, they got to go down. That's what restoration, I'm going to have to go down. I'm going to have to dig first. They don't stand buildings up just like that. They tear down, then they go down, then they build up. And there's too many addicts in here that's trying to be built up and have not went down. You faking, you need to stop lying. And some of y'all, I know your damn sponsor. So when I looked at the second step and how I needed to come to believe, the power removed me out of the equation. My biggest difficulty in dealing with this coming to believe was for far too long, I was the only power I came to believe in. So what he did, he injected another addict into the scene. Somebody stood up one day and they said they hadn't used crack cocaine. Now, you know, I'm a crack smoker. Don't hold it against me. You know, I'm about to start picking in that daggone clarity statement anyway because it's not NA approved. So I'm going to tell you I was a crack smoker. I mean, I got an insatiable relationship with crack cocaine, what I'm using. Man, I love you. Do you understand that? And somebody raised their hand and they said they wasn't using crack cocaine a year? Are you serious? A whole 365 days, even when the voice called you at 2 o'clock in the morning and you know you're not going to be able to get back in and it's snowing, but you will sacrifice that $10 and sleeping outside anyway. That crack cocaine? Yep. We're talking about bondage. That's bondage anytime I get up out of my bed. $10? It's January. So I grabbed hold of that. And what I started to realize was I was believing in the... Boy, some haters in here. And what you need to know is that I've grown in the program. I've been working since I got here with a sponsor. With no break time. I've been working in NA since I got here. And what you need to understand is when I come to and come alive, not only do I see me, I see you too. I just have grown enough to love you anyway. You ain't really earned it. That's how I had to realize that God ain't give me nothing like I had worked for it. He blessed me. I'm blessing you, loving you. Now that's my story. So I'm sitting there and I didn't came to believe. Because somebody was able to do it. Now what you need to understand is that when this process started, okay, I had a GED. We talking about bondage. Bondage, we ain't talking about youth, we out the crack house. I'm talking about educationally in bondage, undereducated, totally misinformed. It's the escape way or no way. When I got started. So I make the decision, and I'm not really cognizant of what the decision calls for. So they say, well, the literature suggests that you prove your third step decision. I'm talking about pre-flat book, it works now, why? Newcomer, we actually got members in the fellowship that got more clean time than some of our literature. We talking about the power of the, yeah, okay. That'll hit you on 50 heading down for that person when they share with all that time and you want to tell them, that ain't what the book say. Tell them I said it. Tell them I said that. It's on tape anyway, so I ain't gonna know. So what they suggested, you got a third step decision, you with God, do you have an inventory? Do you even understand what it is that you're working with? Or are you still thinking that you did it because you got a disease? So I took the glimpse in the inventory, and the inventory suggested some other things. that mama not loving you really did have an impact on you. Because, see, the brain is really funny, right? God has a gift that we call a defect because a lot of times we don't understand it. It's called denial. When the power recognizes that I couldn't handle seeing the truth at that stage, Mitzi, he issues denial. Saladin, protect yourself. Because it's a hell of a thing not to get hugged by your mother. Stop bothering me about how many women I didn't have. Because I know what I'm looking for. Searching for love. Show your hands if you're not searching for love in all the wrong places. So it's funny how we all, at the end of the day, got the same issue. I'm looking for the hug. I might have slept with you, but that ain't really what I wanted. And if you listen to my story, because one thing I'm not is a liar. You ain't never been involved in nothing with me and not knowing what you was with. So when I started to recognize that, I'm going to tell you something. And I don't do the finger point, not blame the disease or blame the devil. I really don't do that. But I'm telling you, there is a spiritual thing that takes place the minute the addict desires awareness. And I wanted to know. I was in here 23 years old. Man, I was starting to kind of open up, sharing. People was loving me, this, that, and the other. And you know what happened? I stumbled past the mirror one day. I said, boy, goddamn. And it's a hell of a thing to realize that you're so much more than you always told yourself. And I'm talking about before I hadn't even really blossomed. I hadn't really even blossomed yet. But it dawned on me, I had been telling myself so many negative things because of the stuff that I had seen. And I had held myself accountable to a story that wasn't even mine. So I'm in bondage. I don't understand that. How would I know? I was smoking crack. So when I started to do the work and I put the inventory on paper and I sit down and have the talk, the honest, that's a lot of what's missing in a lot of our lives in here. Who have you had the honest discussion with? I ain't talking about the honest discussion about what somebody else said. I'm talking about the honest discussion I had to have about, like, yeah, you know, it really did hurt. I really was ashamed when the marshals kicked my door in looking for my father and all of the kids were standing around outside. I really didn't feel good about me when they teased me about my name and I didn't have name brand clothes. The fighting was more about appeasing the insecurity. So I'm trying to come out now. I don't even realize. And this is the blessing about the freedom. It's not till I started to pursue it that I understood the magnitude of what I was in. He ain't wrestling with no you. That's a bear. It's a bear there. So I had to like start to retrain myself, man. I'm talking about, I don't even realize what I'm doing. Because for some reason, I'm not using, and I thought that my life was going to be all right once I left my grandmother's TV in the house. But now, I find that I can't stop. Just like I couldn't stop. So what drives the entirely ready process? So God sent me back to my story. In a conversation I overheard when I was working out in Alexandria, I had a peer, he was talking to a young lady that was strung out on crack. And she was talking and talking, and he said, baby, well, what you using? She said, I'm using crack cocaine. One of our predecessors, man. Profound dude, man. He leaned back. He said, oh, baby, don't worry about that. Smoking crack will stop you from smoking crack. So the only thing I'm telling you is that the topic is real and there is a degree of bondage, but there's no way to get to the freedom without the pain. So I had to grow accustomed to hurting in NA. And I had to remember, like, Saladin, don't go with that new way stuff they be giving up now, you know, because some of us got stuff that's appropriate for meetings or not. Man, I need to get all of it out. It don't feel good, though. But, boy, if you know anything about gardening, if you really want a rose bush to blossom, you got to got to prune the edges. So I prune myself in NA. And what it did, at some point, the ego started to decrease. So I stopped standing up in arrogance, talking about how I did this one, and I had it like this, and the anger was controlling me. And I started to get down on my knees in the quietness of humility and ask God. So you really don't know what I'd be doing. Because it stopped being a show for y'all. I ain't trying to get better for you now. I got better for you 10 years. It's me now. I didn't glimpse the vision of hope that's in the painful 6 and 7 step process. So what God said to me was, yeah, boy, you got a lot of stuff with you, but you brilliant. And he said, brilliance is not the destination. Greatness is. So I'm steaming towards greatness and don't even understand. I'm a crackhead from Eastgate. He said, no, you ain't. That's one of the stops you made. But that's not who I am. That's not who I am. We don't use the description as addicts as a negative label like society does. We use the description as addicts just as a point of reference for us to connect. That's all. So I said, okay. And I got Lord in the asking the $1 million question. Well, God, if that's not who I am, who am I? Good God. Who am I then? And at some point, I started to stop receiving. Because, you know, I had been around the block a few times, right? And people would come and they would be just, yeah, man, I'd be going through, you know, I'm holding, you know, I guess my, man, I'm like Saladin. And I'm going to tell you how God started to deal with me. Saladin, you ain't no hoe. That wasn't about no sex. Hoes of you sex, that's not, So I started to heal. And what he did was he suggested that I make a list. This really where we get to the freedom. This is where our program, our 12-step program, suggests freedom. The freedom ain't in talking about what you got right. We get free as a result of taking note of what we did to others. Smack dab on my face. And that's where it came, that real freedom ain't free. This is going to cost. There's a price to pay. And I had lost the ability to walk around in the fellowship like I wasn't hurting. And then I had gotten a little bit better. I had like stopped needing to like be out of order and tell you, so what, Ann? So I try to carry myself a little different today. So I'm standing and God is orchestrating opportunities for me to set right what I had messed up. Right. And this is spiritual because an amends in my mind, it's not the same as God would have me make amends. God got a special amends, and it's called leave it alone. That's my toughest amends. Because subconsciously, the desire is to still play God. So I'm at the inventory every single day. Consciously aware of, did I do something? And if I did, I need to correct it. See, that whole 10-step process is about getting the addict free enough so that he can have the discussion with the power. Because that's really the freedom. God, you want me to me? So I look up, and I'm in total discontent, and I look up, man, and I'm in graduate school one day. And it's funny because I always come down to Ocean City and I go through a lot of emotional drama when I come down here. But I'm telling you, in 2 weeks, man, I'm going to graduate with a master's degree. This is, man, you got to understand, we're talking about miracle in the mirror. You know, I was debating with one with an addict. We was going back and forth, and I said, miracle in the mirror, and this is just me. I'm real analytical. It kind of loses its fervor if the addict don't say, I am the miracle in the mirror. It's not the gesture that makes that big. It's the individual. So I look up and I'm the miracle. And it's a hell of a thing, man, because it's in order for you to see that, you got to be in your own miracle process. Because you would be thinking the miracle is a curse if your mind ain't right. So, man, I went to school and I worked, man, went to school with two jobs, man. Y'all know my drama, you know, I had gotten married. And I'm telling you, I look and I appreciate people when they commit and they really love each other till they want to marry somebody. You know, because, man, at 30 years old, I was still more misinformed and misguided than I thought when I got married. I really didn't know. Somebody asked me, are you ready? And I asked them, what is are you ready? See, I'm going to tell you the power of the program for the answer givers. The program is not about the answers it gives. It's about the questions it forces you to ask. So I've been learning about what ready is about. Responsibility for another person's emotions.
Yeah, that's right.
That can only come as a result of me healing from my own. Don't think you're going to be loving somebody and you don't love yourself. And I ain't talking about love yourself as indicated by I love myself. I'm talking about a pattern of actions that suggests I'm going to take care of myself at the highest level no matter what. Loving myself. So I went to school. And I'm waiting for the blessing to drop now. I'm talking about walking in hope now. I didn't like stop needing to reference the book. I be the book. I'm the basic text. I be that for you. I can do that. So I'm filled with hope right now. Things are difficult. I got many tremendous bridges to cross. But understand, I'm up for the challenge. I'm a show enough soldier to the fullest. Armed with humility. Filled with awareness of a power that is greater than me. Love for his people. Good God Almighty, boy. I'm a cook with grease. Don't miss it. Don't miss it, I'm telling you. Another recent accomplishment is they voted me area of the chair of the area that got me clean. We're talking about serving. Me. Controlled by self-centeredness. And now somebody else is more important than me. So the last bridge is just understanding the need for healthy detachment. Yeah, that's what we have. Because I'm trying to grow, man. I really don't want nobody's blood on my hands. You know, because not only can I be a blessing, I can be a stumbling block to somebody else for their blessing. And I don't want to be that. So, I'm going to leave y'all with this. I started to, like, develop mottos and cliches. You know, as I write and I digress about world issues and social injustices. Look, check this out. And it's funny because I was watching Roots too. And understand this. We deal in principle here, not in color. So we're talking about the principle of slavery. We're not talking about the colors involved in the process. Okay? Because I love my white friends, my white addicts too. It was a difference, man, when I look between Kunta and Fiddler. It was a difference between them, man. Kunta would run. Fiddler would stay. Fiddler could not understand why Kunta could not stay on that plantation. And it dawned on him, man, that the difference between them was that one of them was born into slavery. The other one was captured. If you can always tap into the fact that you were captured, you'll always run towards your freedom. But if you settle like you've been born and that's where you're supposed to be, you'll think that you're supposed to stay there, and you're not. We're free. Thanks for listening.